with Durban. I've obviously lived through a very different, very many different types of political and social environments. And when I studied art history, and then I started off being a volunteer when I was younger, when my children were small, with an art organization, the KZNSA, and then I became very involved in their committee, and I became the national vice president of the Arts Association at that time. So I did quite a lot of traveling around the country, and it was at that time, it was during the late 70s, early 80s, and there was a lot of turmoil in the arts and everywhere else, because we were also at that point, the South African Association of Arts had quite a strong link to the government, and F. W. de Klerk was the Minister of Education at that time, and he was quite involved with the arts policies. And in the Durban field, because I was president of the Durban organization, we were very anti the idea. They were trying to take exhibitions overseas to places like the Valparaiso Biennale and so forth in order to break the cultural boycott. So we kept a very strong position that we refused to participate in any of these exhibitions, because we obviously wanted the boycott to remain in order to make changes and so forth. So there was quite a lot of turmoil between the Durban side of the Arts Association and the national side. And many artists followed this and also boycotted the international exhibitions. A lot of them did participate. And it went through that period. And then I joined the art gallery here as a temporary lecturer. I used to come once a week only in 1980, I started, and then later on became a full-time education officer. I actually set up the education. There was no education department at that time, so I was the first person to set up an education department, and we trained volunteer people to do guiding of the tours and organized exhibitions and so forth. And then another education officer came. Her name was Pat Causa. She was the first Zulu speaking education officer actually in the country. So, and she came really to try and involve the Zulu schools and so forth. And then there was a change of structure in the department and in the municipality, and I then became director of the art gallery, and I was appointed acting in 1995, which was just a year after democracy. Up until that time, the displays had been very Eurocentric, and there had been quite a lot of growing criticism from the public about the Eurocentric displays, but as education officers, we didn't really have much say into the curatorial aspect. So that was my first, I suppose, mission as such, was to change the permanent displays, because most of the Durban Art Gallery had a reputation when it still... The Durban Art Gallery is actually a museum. Perhaps I must go back onto that. It's not an art gallery as such. It's a museum which is under the municipal structure, and it was started in 1892. So it's been going about 110 years or whatever now. So it's a very old institution, and it was started off with a British colonial collection, as well as certain South African, quite a lot of South African paintings, but it was all European paintings, and the artists who were in the collection were white South Africans. There was no black South African artist represented at all until the 1960s. So the museum collection had actually been going 70 years before a black South African artist was even brought into the collection. There was then a sort of short period of, I suppose, not a short period, there was a period of about 10, 15 years where there was very, very slow collection of black artists, one or two or three or four, so forth. And then from the 70s, they did really start buying work by black, particularly Zulu artists. The idea had always been to concentrate particularly on Zulu artists because of the area which we live in and so forth. And there'd be no, what I can describe as craft, which would be the, of course, now that's another problematic, what's art, what's craft. But when I talk about the craft, I'm talking about the medium really, which would be beadwork and ceramics made by black people. So there was a lot of that purchased during this, from the late 70s onwards, and basketware mainly made by the local community here. So the collection started changing in that way, but the displays were mainly still focusing on particularly the English Victorian art. There was a permanent display of Victorian art in the Circular Gallery, which is the biggest gallery and the grandest gallery, and that had never changed for about 25 years in the tradition of a European museum. But when it became to the 90s, we felt that our role was not so much a museum to reflect the past, but something that people, the local community, could become more involved in, and to also link, because there was also changes in the school curricula and the tertiary curricula and the art, where concentration was now becoming to be much more focused on South African art production. So we changed the displays accordingly and rehung all the galleries and took down the older collection, which we obviously have, we retain. We have not in any way sold or got rid of it. Mm. We have a very good storage facility, which coincidentally was built about the same time as all this changes. So that in a way made it possible for us to put our foreign collection to rest for a little while. And then we also started having more community-based exhibitions. For example, at the moment we have an exhibition of school art that I was just saying, we opened it on Saturday, that this is the 10th year we've had that. So previously that wouldn't have been considered good enough to be in a museum and take the space it does. But the advantage of showing that work is that we have it brings in an enormous amount of schools, and that is always a very good thing to bring, you know, to bring more school children, and who at one stage were not coming because they didn't see it as relevant. And we normally have, during this school exhibition, we have probably about 10,000 school children coming through, which is, for a little, you know, place like ours, it's a very good number, and yeah. And of a very specific age group. It's generally the final year age group, which is 16, 17 years old. And those are the, and then I think maybe that the start of another program, which I'm going to tell you about, maybe grew in a way from seeing all these for about 2-3 years, seeing all these school children coming for the matric art. Matric is our final year. It's what used to be called matric. It's grade 12. It's the final school year. And then not coming back. So we then sort of strategized and invited a group of young people, older people like tertiary students, to say, why aren't you coming back? You've all come to see the school things. And then we did a whole lot of working out and discussions. And then they sort of said, well, the gallery doesn't feel that welcoming, or, and so forth. So we started a strategy called Red Eye Art. So, which, and the idea of Red Eye was initially, when it started in 1998, was to have a multimedia event, which was organized by this group of young people themselves, mainly curated by them. So it had two components. One was like a skills development process for the people, and the other one was that they knew what their age group wanted. We didn't know. So it started off, we had it once a month on a Friday evening from 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock, and it was a multimedia event where we had disc jockeys and bands and contemporary dance and installations, and it was amazingly successful. The first event we had, which was something totally new and different, at the one event in those 2 hours, we had 2,000 people. So, and all of that age group. And we got enormous publicity. Other places in the country copied us. And we carried on like this for about 4 years. And then it just was too much work to do. And then we started having it 4 times a year. Mm. But because of the popularity and the interest, and what we did was the one where we were changing over to 4 times a year, we decided to have a street party as well. And so we started off at the gallery, then we had installations in the street, and we got a couple of buildings where we got permission, and artists came and did murals and graffiti. And then we became involved with the Urban Regeneration Program, who approached us and started funding us because they saw the value of bringing people into the city after hours and making people more familiar with the city. So then it grew from 6 to 8 in the gallery to an event which started at 6 and ended at midnight and happens in the gallery and outside. But what is important, and I always must stress this, it always, always starts off for 2 hours in the gallery. So it is not just a street party, which a lot of people think it is, and it's actually not. It's bringing people into our spaces and then making them feel more comfortable and familiar with the outside city spaces. So now we link up with partnerships with some of the hotels, and we put a stage outside, and we invite artists to create installations that respond to the city somehow. Yeah. So we've had a lot of different, we've bought like the little tents that the street traders work in, and artists have transformed those tents into something else. Or we've had the park. People have worked around the old colonial statues and made statements and comments around them and so forth. And dance has been choreographed around the spaces. And so that has been sort of one of our major strategies to involve younger people, also provide a space for people. We now get funded quite well, so we're able to pay all the performers and artists, which wasn't the case when we started. And in the meantime, our gallery exhibitions, as I've said, are more community focused. We have one for Women's Day opening tomorrow where local people have submitted work. We have others which maybe are more curated shows, like the photography one by Omar Butcher. And a lot of our exhibitions are shared with the other museums in the other state or city museums in the country, where one curates an exhibition and travels it around to others. We also, because Durban has a very busy conference centre and it's quite near us, another strategy which we've used quite often is linking with a major conference, and curating an exhibition which somehow would link with the conference so that it becomes a more of a bigger event where art is part of it in the city. So the last one was an international conference of YMCAs, and we actually got a show by the artist photographer Peter Magubane, who's done a show of Madiba. It's called Madiba, Man of Destiny, and it's photographs, really quite social documentary photographs of Madiba's, not only him, but the phases that influenced him. So that was Sharpeville, Soweto, Winnie Mandela's imprisonment, and a lot of sort of photos of the Mandela family. In 2000, there was a very large international AIDS conference in the city, and at that time we did a very big project where we involved 1,000 members of the community painting a very, very large banner which went right around the City Hall for AIDS awareness, and that was like an installation. And then we also had exhibitions about AIDS and art around AIDS in the City Hall spaces as well. So that's how we sort of link and feel that we've become relevant to the community. And when we curate exhibitions from our collection, sometimes we now bring out the older European works and link them perhaps thematically with newer works or more local works, so that people are sort of starting now to begin to see parts of our older collection as well. And that's, I think, a broad view of our role maybe in the city and how we've changed to accommodate it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that's answering what you're looking for.